Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. Mad cow. The discovery of just one animal with a disease forever changed the Alberta cattle industry. That was May of 2003. 3 years later, we're looking at the impact of all prion-related diseases on our health, environment, and economy. The newly formed Alberta Prion Research Institute recently convened its first public symposium. Experts from the United Kingdom, the United States, and Canada gathered to share their experiences and research findings. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Who would ever think that a little misfolded protein could cause so much trouble? But that's what's behind the mad cow phenomena, and now the many related forms of spongy brain that prions cause in other animals and humans. Scrapies, chronic wasting disease, variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Despite the scientific attention these have received over the last two decades, we're still a long ways from knowing their true cause or from finding any treatment. Last year, the Alberta government earmarked $35 million for prion research. This resulted in the establishment of the Alberta Prion Research Institute under the umbrella of the Alberta Ingenuity Fund. With a prestigious International Scientific Advisory Committee in place and a scientific director just appointed, the Prion Institute recently held its first symposium in Calgary. Dr. Stephen Moore is the new scientific director of the Alberta Prion Research Institute.
The symposium today was designed to give us an idea of where we can best place our resources in the area of prion research in Alberta in order to make a real difference for the industry. We don't want to duplicate what other people are doing around the world. We want to do something that adds to everything else.
Now, the panel that you had today, speakers came from the United Kingdom, the United States, and also representing a national Canadian perspective. What do they have to add to our knowledge here?
Well, certainly the speaker from the United Kingdom, for example, comes with a long, long experience in BSE. When you look at the case in the United Kingdom, which started in the mid-80s and has been going ever since, the amount of experience they have in BSE in particular is vast, and we can do nothing but benefit from sharing that knowledge. The United States have got particular interests in both in BSE and in chronic wasting disease. We share those interests because, particularly chronic wasting disease, the deer and elk don't obey the borders. So a problem in wild animals in northern USA is a problem in Canada. So we can benefit by pooling our resources and our expertise and exchanging information there as well.
Is there anything that stands out from today's presentations that is new information?
I think we heard a lot about animal resources, the big studies that have been done in the United Kingdom, and what we don't have to duplicate there, which is really important because they're very, very expensive studies. We were basically told that we could have access to those materials if we so needed. We've learned from the speakers from the US about some potential live animal tests that are in preparation. They need more research, of course, but we could partner with industry groups to help in that regard. The work on chronic wasting disease going on in the US was very interesting, and considering we just found a wild case of chronic wasting disease in Alberta recently, I think it's good for us to form linkages there.
You've just been appointed the scientific director of the Alberta Prion Research Institute. What do you see as being the priorities for the Institute?
We're working across a very broad front. We're doing everything from medicine to agriculture, science, and social sciences. I think we can have a real impact in the social sciences very quickly. We're looking at the economic impacts of what happened, at the social impacts of what happened. I think we can be better prepared with policy, etc. Next time something like this may happen, let's hope not, but if it happens again with maybe another disease or another issue in agriculture, we'll know better what happened in this time round and inform government so they can form appropriate policy for what to be prepared for what might happen next time. I think that's one real thing we can do quickly. We can certainly get researchers together here working collaboratively. There's a number of things going on in Alberta and across Canada, and we're forming linkages in those endeavours. Today will help that immensely because we've all sat down, we're talking together. I think one of our priorities is recruitment, international and national recruitment into Alberta. We want the best people in the world here. We got an insight today on some of those people, I think, and people who might want to come to Alberta and share in the experience here.
You've been doing your work at the University of Alberta. What's the expertise that you bring to this? What area are you working in?
My area is in bovine genomics. I've been working for a number of, well, 6.5 years I've been in Canada and in Alberta looking at the genetics of quality and production traits in beef cattle. Those same techniques can be applied to disease issues such as BSE. So that's what I bring. I bring basically a technological base that's applicable to some of the questions, certainly not all of them, but some of the questions surrounding BSE.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Stephen Moore, Scientific Director of the Alberta Prion Research Institute. The first speaker at the Prion Symposium in Calgary was Dr. Neil Cashman. Neil holds a Canada Research Chair in Neurodegeneration and Protein Misfolding Diseases at the University of British Columbia. He's also the Scientific Director of PrionNet Canada.
Prions are an entirely novel form of infection. We've known about viruses for a century and bacteria for even longer than that, but all of these conventional infectious agents depend on DNA or RNA in order to replicate, whereas prions are a protein-only agent. The process of prion propagation is more similar to crystallization than it is conventional microbial replication.
Well, you called that the new biology. What did you mean?
I mean it is brand new on the scale of scientific knowledge. The idea that there could be a protein-only agent is only about 20 years old, and it's really only over the past 10 years that we've come to grips with the weird and novel biology of this agent, of the prions. So we're operating from a position of ignorance. There's a great deal of interest and research, but we don't understand one-tenth of what we need to know about prion biology.
Well, you mentioned that when it comes to propagation, if a good guy meets up with the bad guy, the prion will turn the good guy into the bad guy. Could you explain that?
So there's a normal protein that we all have. It's expressed in virtually every organ of the body, most abundantly in brain. That's called the cellular isoform of the prion protein. That has an unknown function, but it's well conserved in evolution. When that normal protein comes in contact with a disease-misfolded prion protein, it is converted into more of the disease form of the prion protein. So when the good guy meets the bad guy, then two bad guys walk away from the scene.
Now, you happen to mention tonsils. What role do tonsils play in the detection of these diseases?
That's an interesting question. Human bovine spongiform encephalopathy, which we call variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, appears to propagate in many tissues in the body before it gets to the brain. And one of the tissues it propagates in is lymphoid tissue, and that would include the tonsils and other lymphoid tissue associated with the gut, spleen, lymph nodes. So it is possible by doing a tonsil biopsy or a tonsillectomy to find or identify people incubating variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease at an early stage or certainly before the presentation of the neurologic signs and symptoms of the disease.
Do we have any indication of how many people might be incubating this disease?
It appears using back calculation and other sophisticated epidemiologic techniques that there will only be about 1,000 or so cases of variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is due to consumption of material contaminated with the mad cow prions. However, this is the symptomatic side of this. If only 1,000 or so, each case is tragic, but it's limited. It does appear, though, on a tonsil survey that was conducted in the United Kingdom last year, that as many as 22,000 people in the United Kingdom alone are incubating the disease. So the difference between these two numbers, 1,000 versus 22,000, is essentially anybody's guess at this point. We really don't know what it means. One possible meaning is that it's rare, one case out of 20 actually develops the neurologic disease, whereas people can be carriers without developing the neurologic disease.
Do we know if they're carriers, if they can pass it along?
We do know, unfortunately, that people who have been incubating variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease and who have donated blood before the onset of neurologic symptoms, that can be transmitted to a recipient. So the disease can be transmitted through blood and blood products. This also looks to be very rare, but it does occur on a background of people who are infected with variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, who are incubating the disease, but not yet ill from the disease. So this is sometimes years in advance of falling ill of the disease.
Where are we in terms of treatment?
There is no treatment for Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease or for variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease to date. It's a rapidly progressive, unmerciful disease that claims every affected individual.
If we look at the overall picture, is there any move towards developing vaccines, for example?
There is a great deal of interest in a therapeutic vaccine or an immunotherapy. There are several groups around the world who have hypothesized that a vaccine might be possible. My own group is following up on the possibility that a target which is unique to the misfolded prion protein may be the safest and most efficacious vaccine approach or immunotherapy approach.
Are we on the road to an explosion in terms of more and more of these cases coming out?
I think the human situation for Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, for classical Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, is stable. It's a rare disease, 1 per million per year across the general population. For variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, there has been an epidemic, and we're still going through an epidemic, which peaked around the year 2000 or 2001 and is now trailing off. But these cases are only the cases that have developed the disease through exposure to BSE-contaminated food, mad cow-contaminated food. There's another possible epidemic which could emerge due to blood and blood transfusion, due to surgery, perhaps even dentistry. We're in so early days at this point, we don't know if this disease will result in a secondary epidemic due to medical or surgical procedures.
Is that something that PrionNet Canada is watching?
We're certainly vigilant to the possibility of bloodborne transmission of variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. In Canada, we've only had a single case of variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and that was in someone who immigrated from the United Kingdom, who contracted the disease and was incubating the disease when he moved away from the United Kingdom. So we are aware of this possibility and monitoring the Canadian CJD surveillance system for other cases of variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease.
What is the role of PrionNet Canada, and how will you be working with the Alberta Prion Research Institute?
So clearly there is a a major overlap in interest between PrionNet Canada and the Alberta Prion Research Institute. We have scientists in PrionNet Canada who are also scientists within the APRI organization. We have board members that are shared between the two organizations. So our ideal is to go forward and bring Canada to an excellent position in prion research recognized around the world. I don't think that there's competition between us, and I think that there is an enormous potential for synergy between us if we spend our money wisely investigating the problems of importance, of urgent importance to Canadians.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Neil Cashman, Canada Research Chair in Neurodegeneration and Protein Misfolding Diseases at the University of British Columbia. He's also the Scientific Director of PrionNet Canada. Neil was speaking at the recent symposium sponsored by the new Alberta Prion Research Institute. Chronic wasting disease is to elk and deer what mad cow disease is to cattle. It's gradually spreading from the United States into Western Canada, with the first Alberta case being discovered just a few months ago. Chronic wasting disease is of particular concern to scientists studying prion diseases because it's probably impossible to control in the wild. Dr. Glenn Telling is an associate professor of biochemistry, immunology, and molecular genetics at the University of Kentucky. He spoke at the recent Prion Symposium, sponsored by the Alberta Prion Research Institute, about what we can learn from the differences between prion diseases in cattle and wild animals.
Well, that's really one of the major questions that we're trying to address. There are obviously prion diseases of different species, and they presumably have different origins and they have different modes of transmission. Exactly what those origins and modes of transmission are, at least for CWD, remain pretty enigmatic compared to BSE, for example. We know that BSE is a foodborne disease. It was initiated by feeding cattle contaminated meat and bone meal. And knowing that, it's relatively straightforward to halt the progression of the epidemic. And in fact, that's been successfully done in the UK, whereas, you know, BSE was a major agricultural problem there. After the ban of feeding meat and bone meal, fortunately the disease declined and is now a relatively rare disease. Now, the issues surrounding the origins and modes of transmission of CWD, as I said, are much more complex and enigmatic. We don't know where it originated from, whether it was a disease in a different species that crossed the species barrier, for example. We've known about it since the late 60s, early 70s. It appears to be a very contagious disease, and it appears to be spreading in geographic range. So all of these things and several other issues surrounding the biology of this disease make it a very unusual disease, and one about which we can't answer many questions, unfortunately, at the moment.
This was first observed in 1967. What do we know about the circumstances around that first appearance?
So, to the best of my knowledge, these were captive animals in a research facility in Fort Collins in northern Colorado. And these animals started to develop a wasting syndrome, and then primarily because of the work of Elizabeth Williams, who identified this as a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, she was able to show that you know, this was a prion disease like scrapie. Now, I've been told, it's as apocryphal, but that on the same facility, years earlier, there were sheep housed in that facility. And it's thought that possibly some of those sheep could have been infected, maybe subclinically with scrapie, and that perhaps this was the source of the origin of CWD. And the timeline of when scrapie was introduced into the US via Canada from the UK, it kind of makes some sense that might be the origin. But we really don't know. And so things like those that initial cohort of infected deer were removed from those premises and slaughtered. The topsoil, a few inches of topsoil was removed, and then some years later the facility was repopulated with new deer, and ultimately those deer subsequently developed disease. So these sorts of scenarios are very similar to what people have observed with scrapie. For instance, in Iceland and Cyprus, similar situations have occurred via environmental contamination. But this is what I mean. We really don't have a firm understanding of what the origins and mechanism of transmission are.
You've been doing some research on prions and the chronic wasting disease with transgenic mice. What's involved in that?
So we've been doing this for some time, and this goes back to work that I was doing in Stan Prusiner's lab at UCSF, and we were focusing in large part on the human prion diseases like Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And what we showed back then was that by expressing the prion protein from different species, in that case human PRP, PRP stands for the prion protein, in mice, normally mice are resistant to prions from different species. This is the phenomenon referred to as the species barrier. But we showed that by expressing the PRP sequence from these different species that we could now make those mice susceptible. And also the effect of the normal wild-type mouse protein was quite profound. And so what we do is we make these transgenic mice on a PRP knockout background that don't express mouse PRP. So we applied that to chronic wasting disease. Quite simply, we said, could we express the cervid prion protein gene in this transgenic mouse background and eliminate the species barrier that normally exists between cervids and mice? And in fact, that's what we did, and we showed that by generating these mice and characterizing them, that they were in fact susceptible to CWD. And now for the first time, we have a tractable animal model to address some of these biological uncertainties about CWD.
In your talk this morning, you said that you found it in the muscle of the wild animals. Was that a surprise to you?
So these are diseases of the central nervous system. All the pathological consequences of prion diseases occur in the CNS tissue. So these are neurodegenerative diseases. But a few years ago, we published a study, and this was I was involved in this when I was with Stan Prusiner, showing definitively that in experimentally inoculated, just regular normal wild-type mice, that there was substantial prion infectivity in muscle, and also the disease-associated isoform of the protein, PRP scrapie, was also present there. Now, this raised the possibility that the meat of animals entering the food chain could be a risk material for a human exposure. And in the case of BSE, to the extent that this has been looked at, for instance, in transgenic models of BSE, there's no evidence for substantial levels of BSE prion infectivity in muscle. So in contrast to that situation in cattle, I guess what we're finding in chronic wasting disease affected animals, relatively high, not insubstantial levels of prion infectivity in muscle is somewhat surprising. But when you say surprise, it means that we sort of had some vested interest in the outcome, and we really didn't know what to expect. But obviously this is important information now, because for the first time we know definitively that muscle of these infected animals is a risk material for humans.
In what way?
Well, certainly hunters. We reasoned that if people were going to be exposed to CWD, then it would be as a result of people either consuming or handling this material, in particular hunters, also elk are farmed for their meat. And so obviously hunters might be at risk when they're dressing this animals in the wild, for example, and certainly consuming them and their families consuming CWD-infected meat. Now, the $64,000 question here is whether or not CWD will cause disease in human beings. And at the moment, we don't know. But we do know that BSE is a zoonotic disease. In other words, that it has transmitted from cattle to human beings, we presume via the food chain, causing a new variant form of CJD in predominantly young adults and teenagers. Now, whether the same is going to be true for chronic wasting disease remains to be seen. At the moment, there's no epidemiological evidence that has occurred. And to the extent that this has been looked at experimentally, I would say there's conflicting information, or at least uncertain information.
What's next for your research?
What's next is obviously the discovery of prion infectivity in muscle opens up some obvious avenues of research. We looked only in a particular muscle group from the hind limbs of animals in the clinical stage of disease. So we don't know, for example, whether animals in the preclinical stage of disease that hunters would be, you know, obviously hunting, they wouldn't be hunting sick animals necessarily, whether muscle from those animals also contains more or even or less infectivity. We don't know if different muscle groups in the animal contains more or less prion infectivity. So we want to address those issues as best we can in the near future. And more generally, like I said before, this transgenic model now offers an opportunity to answer some other unresolved issues. For instance, are there different strains of CWD prions in the wild? What are the effects of genetic variation in the population on susceptibility or pathogenesis of CWD prions? And what are the risks of other species, including humans, to CWD?
Thank you very much, Glenn.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Dr. Glenn Telling, an associate professor of biochemistry, immunology, and molecular genetics at the University of Kentucky. He was in Calgary recently presenting to the Prion Symposium hosted by the Alberta Prion Research Institute. I also spoke with Dr. Neil Cashman and Dr. Stephen Moore. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by Alberta Ingenuity, Alberta Research Council, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the Alberta Conservation Association, Calgary Technologies, Inc., the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Gaming Research Institute, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Innovation and Science, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Science Alberta Foundation, Ducks Unlimited Canada, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.